Welcome, one and all, to Ladies with Gumption, episode 205, The Seal, a term coined by Flash TV News. Thank you for that. We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. I'm Tatiana, and I'm here with
Jessica
and May.
And you can find us at DCTV Gumption on Twitter, at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com if you want to send us asks, or at ladieswgumption@gmail.com if you want to email us your feedback on whether it be Flash or Gotham Knights, maybe, or any of our Patreon episodes, which you can listen to for the low, low price of $10 a month, I think, maybe. And you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere that you listen to podcasts for the most part. If we're not talking about DCTV, we might be talking about the MCU, or HBO Max, or Netflix series, or movies like Cocaine Bear. In the news section for the week, James Gunn has finally found the perfect director for Superman Legacy, and it is himself. Even though before he was like, oh no, I can't do it, I have no time, I have to like visualize the DCU. But then he was like, you know what? Who better to enact my vision than me? And, I mean, at least this way we'll know what his vision really is. And we can't say that someone is disrespecting his vision, because it is
That's
him.
That's true.
So, what are our thoughts on Superman Legacy director and also creator of the DCU, James Gunn?
Well, I guess I can't say that I'm surprised that he's directing the movie. Since he is writing it, and he tends to write and direct his stuff in the past, like Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. So, you do you, James Gunn. I guess looking forward to seeing what comes out of the DCU now that we're moving fast towards like the Flash and our reset or whatever.
Right. What do you think be his like the tone of the super? Because you know the tone of like James Gunn movies. You've got like Guardians of the Galaxy on the DC side. We have Peacemaker. Do you think that translates to Superman, or, you know, oh wait, he also did Suicide Squad, right? So
yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, though. Like, I feel like what I've seen from him, because to be fair, I haven't seen his non-superhero stuff, so I don't know. But what I've seen from it in terms of superhero world is very, like, silliness that sometimes becomes earnest. So I'm not sure that he will be able to do the opposite. Maybe he will. I don't know his life. Of like, because Superman is very deeply earnest, I think, if you're doing him right, you know? So yes. Earnestness, that can sometimes be silly. We'll find out. So, I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't mind it to be a lot more earnest than we've seen before, because I feel like people think Superman, like, we've gotten a lot of darker takes on him, or things that are not necessarily as joyful as they can be. So I feel like a swing in the opposite direction might be what is needed, so long as it's not like extremely silly and takes away from like the gravitas of the character.
Right.
He's, you still want him to be like Boy Scout good. You want that to stay the same. So it'll be, yeah, that would be my only question. It'll be interesting to see what his take, also who his Superman will be. Because I feel like that might also give a good indication of what kind of movie he's envisioning, so we'll see.
That's true. We have cycled through many a Superman in our lifetimes. When he brings back Brandon, now we know, we're on the right path. Superman returns again!
So, I'm not opposed.
Exactly. Superman never stops returning. So in other, in the kind of DC TV news, DC HBO Max, maybe, not even sure if it's going to be HBO Max anymore news, Theo Rossi is joining the Penguin, finally returning to his Italian roots. How do we feel about that?
I mean, that was my, is like, oh, he's going back to being Italian again? Because every time I've seen him, he's been Afro-Latino. All the, like, the roles that I've seen, and I think like Becca on Twitter, she was like, one time she saw him being like Egyptian, so I was like, okay, so he's back in the right like ballpark, I guess. But I saw someone underneath, I know the story came out from Deadline, I don't know if they've cast or released his cast role yet, But someone was like theorizing maybe Victor Zsasz, and I'm like, I could.
He see definitely that. Looks like a Victor Zsasz. I could definitely buy that. Yeah, for sure. Speaking of, like, I just had to say that, like, the part of it that really is like, really is the Afro Latino part. Like, why are you Afro Latino? No one is believing that. If you were like, if he's just saying Latino, then like, well, okay, but you're not Giancarlo Esposito. Stop. So.
That's a fair point. Fair point. Casting, you know, we could sit here and complain about it all day. It could be its own podcast one day.
It could, but this podcast today is actually about Gotham Knights and the Flash, and the person who will lead us through recaps, joys, no joys, and feedback, and a lady thumbs of the week that we sometimes forget is May. So tell us the story, May. Take it away,
yes,
May.
Yes, we shall begin with side A with Gotham Knights. The new show that premiered on the CW. We don't know what the future will hold for this show, but I'm getting ahead of myself. And its first episode starts with Batman's death. In the wake of Bruce Wayne's murder, his adopted son, Turner Hayes, who is an original character on the show, he does not exist in the comics, much to my chagrin, is framed for killing the Caped Crusader, along with the children of some of Batman's enemies, including Duella Doe, who is the Joker's daughter, an unpredictable fighter and skilled thief who was born in Arkham Asylum and abandoned by her father, Harper Rowe, a streetwise and acerbic engineer who can fix anything, and her brother Cullen Rowe, a clever transgender teen who is tired of being polite and agreeable. With the charismatic and hard-charging district attorney Harvey Dent and the GCPD hot on their trail, Turner will rely on allies including his best friend and formidable coder Stephanie Brown, an unlikely Batman sidekick, Carrie Kelly, who is Robin. But our knights will soon learn there is a larger, more nefarious force at work within Gotham City, and this team of mismatched fugitives must band together to become its next generation of saviors known as the Gotham Knights. Dun, dun, dun. So, with this new show that kind of exists on its own outside the Arrowverse, no connections, it's a whole new Batman-ish story, what were your overall impressions?
I guess that I am stuck on, you know, I cannot get over the caucasity of creating an OC, calling him Bruce's adopted son. You kill off Bruce in the first episode, so there's no, like, you don't really see the relationship, whatever relationship they had. Expecting him to automatically, like, inherit the fandom legacy of Batman and the legacy that pretty much all the other Bat kids have cultivated over, you know, decades of stories and time with Bruce and all this kind of stuff. And then building a show around him. And then making him the least interesting person in the show. like, it's like, even his name, like, Turner is such a bland name. And he's so unseasoned chicken kind of character. Everything happens around him. There doesn't really seem to be any.
Everything turns around him? Okay.
Any. There doesn't really seem to be any kind of, like, you know, interest in him, around him. The whole. You can already see how they're kind of setting up Stephanie Brown to be, like, his, like, love interest, like, childhood friends, and she's going off with a guy that he doesn't like, and it's just very boring to me. And I don't know him. I don't have a relationship with him. I don't feel any, like, he had this, like, impassioned speech at Bruce's funeral. And I'm just like, not from you. Like, I don't feel any attachment to you. We don't see any attachment that Bruce had. Like, why is he so special that Bruce is like, I must protect you from the darkness in the Bat Cave and all this kind of stuff. But I will adopt this other child and put her as Robin and put her in, you know, into my world. But you are too good. You cannot do this. I don't believe there's nothing edgy to him at all. Probably the most interesting part or trio is the villains. So Joker's daughter and Harper and Cullen and the whole frame thing. I think the Court of Owls is probably the best antagonist force to use in this kind of show. I think that part works pretty well with, like, the mystery. I liked Carrie Kelly, but she only really had two or three real scenes. So I feel like already she's underutilized, and I was a little like low-key annoyed when she saved them all and they were like, who the hell are you? And like, if she's supposed to be Robin, shouldn't they know who the hell she is?
Right.
So that didn't make sense to me. Everybody like coddling Trevor, right?
Turner,
whatever.
Oh, yeah. Who is Trevor? I was like, I thought that was the name of the boyfriend.
That's how forgettable.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Everyone like coddling him the whole episode. I think even going forward, the fact that they found the Batcave so easily. I did think it was interesting that they brought up Joe Chill and like the gun and all that kind of stuff. Like, I thought that was like a cool thing. But if I had to like rate the premiere, I'd give it like a C-, if I'm being generous, a D because I'm petty. I was looking at the tweets and stuff, and people seem to be like, you know, okay about it, or like a little bit interested in it and going along with the story. So I don't really know. I think on TV Guide, the premiere was rated like around like a B or something like that. So somebody's liking it. I just ultimately, I don't believe that I'm the intended audience for this. I'm just going to leave it at that. Like, this is not for me.
I respect that. It's also not for me. So it's not a company like, actually, I loved it. I did not. I will say that I had such low expectations for it that I was like, wow, I guess that was not a complete and total nightmare. It was just, you know, an acceptable thing to double speed through. I definitely agree about Turner being like the most boring, basic, bland bitch. But for that reason, I'm glad that this like random ass white protagonist, Turner Hayes, is an OC and not Dick Grayson and certainly not Damian Wayne. Which would have been horrifying. So, obviously I'd rather see either one of them, and I think that the show would be much stronger if you had them as the protagonist. But with this actor and this writing, I'm so glad it's just this random ass person that we can just ignore and forget about after the show gets canceled this season. So, yeah, cool. I did, you know, shout out to all of the actual Batman characters who are in it. Like, yay Stephanie Brown, yay Carrie Kelly, Harper and Cullen Rowe. Happy to see y'all. I'm most confused by, like, point of confusion is Duella, because her name is Duella Dent in the comics, and even though she originally introduced herself as Joker's daughter, and people think that she's Joker's daughter, it actually turns out in the end that she is Harvey Dent's daughter, which is a cool twist, except Harvey Dent is in the show, and he is not currently crazy or evil, and he has seen Duella, and clearly there's no connection there. So I'm like, are you not his daughter? Does he just not know he has a daughter at all? Has he not seen her since she was...
Has a daughter.
Huh?
So maybe he doesn't know that they're related.
He doesn't know he has a daughter. He hasn't seen her since whatever. And I've spent much more time thinking about all these possibilities than the actual episode. Because the possibilities of who is Duella Dent's father, or Duella whatever's father, and how that will come into play was more interesting than what's actually happening on the screen. But also... I would say that Olivia Rose Keegan as Duella gave the most interesting performance of the episode. So, again, kudos to her. Okay, so then I have just so many questions. Why is the Batcave so easy to get into if you are trying to keep your adorable adopted son out of it? He literally just, like, was in the library or whatever the fuck and touched a shelf, and now he's in the Batcave. Like, wow, that's great job, Bruce. And then the high-tech Bat computer, like, made Stephanie a better hacker. She's like, wow, I suddenly have access to all of this, instead of, like, there being any protocols to prevent someone who is not Bruce from getting into the Bat computer. Like, okay, again, very terrible Batmaning, Bruce. That is why you are dead. Also, where the fuck is Alfred? Cressida Clark, again, another random-ass character from the comics. I think she's part of the Court of Owls in the comics, so I get that, like, they're doing Court of Owls, she's here, but they immediately reveal that she's evil. I was like, you're not going to let us develop a relationship with her or, like, be interested in her being interested, like, caring about Turner and then, like, turn on him? No. She's like, I'm evil. Guess what, guys? That is who I am. And also, again, where is Alfred? Bruce is not that old. Why is Alfred dead or something? Retired? I don't know. Like, bring Alfred. Anyway. Also, why? You already said this. Why did Bruce adopt Turner but then make Harry Robin? What kind of anti-Bruce situation is this? Why would he bring in some child that's not even his or related to him? or whatever, not under his wing. Under his wing. What?
Why wouldn't she be more involved in, like, the mystery? Like, why wouldn't we see her more? Yeah. I feel like she would know how to get into the Batcave. Like, why did it take her so long to show up as Robin?
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. So, yeah. Basically, if you wanted to have just, like, set up the premise better and, like, make him more invested, then you should have had a whole episode where you see Turner and Bruce's relationship and you see Batman and Robin's relationship and you don't know that Robin is not Turner. And then you're like, oh, that's so interesting. And then it leads up to him dying and Turner being there and seeing it, also seeing Robin. So then you're like, oh, shit, he's not Robin. He now knows his dad is Batman. And now he's being framed for his dad's death. End of episode. That's the first episode.
That's fantastic. I would watch that, probably.
Yeah. So, and of course, it should have been Dick or Damian, so that it's more surprising that that is not Robin. But and not just random-ass Turner Hayes. So anyway. So yeah, I don't know. I just think it was like a faulty premise in the first place. And it was not a very interestingly executed version of that faulty premise. Misha Collins, he's chill. He's a very chill Harvey Dent. I don't know how he will turn into Harvey Dent that we know, but I guess that will be something that we will never find out because it'll be canceled before he does.
It was not worth canceling that one for this.
There's sure. No confidence in this show whatsoever.
Exactly. And the only reason that Harper is probably the most interesting to me is because I'm like, she reminds me of Alice. That's it. All right.
I feel like this whole show offends me in general because of the fact that Turner Hayes exists and I do not need him to exist. And like you said, Jess, he's very bland. I didn't care about him or his relationship to Bruce the entire episode. And I feel like in a show where you're going to kill off Batman anyway, you might as well have introduced someone people know by name to some extent. Like, I don't know why, what the hesitance is with using Dick or Damian in these types of shows when they use probably other characters. Yeah, but it's still aggravating. because Turner is just, he's just sort of there. He's like the audience in a lot of ways. You know, we are learning all of this through him. But I feel like he should have been more in the know in general. And like Tati said, you know, her expectations were so low that I was just like, okay, it's whatever. But it's not something that, like, I think the delivery, the monologue that Duella does at the end of the episode on the Court of Owls was kind of chilling. I was like, I'm interested in the Court of Owls. I'm not really interested so much in y'all, so much I am in the Court of Owls, because that is like what they can do and how they rule Gotham is fascinating to me. But I'm not really as invested in like the teens' relationship with each other yet because I don't really feel like it's as well established. At least like on the Turner side of things, I like the villainous trio together because I feel like they have a lot more attitude. They have a lot more layers to them. They have like interesting backstories and stuff that I want to get to know. But when they bring in Turner, it just kind of like ruins the whole thing. It just makes everything so like, I feel like they're trying to make him Mr. Goody Two Shoes. I don't really know anything about anything. I'm relying on Stephanie to do this and these villains to do that, and then maybe, you know, Robin in the future to do something else. So it doesn't really, I don't really know where he fits because I can't buy him as becoming a Gotham Knight at all yet. Like you said about Robin, she came in too late in the game. Again, why not use someone from an actual Robin? It's just, I don't know. I feel like they're trying to make this show happen and it's really hard to get behind, especially as kind of like the CW verse shows are falling apart in general. And I don't like that there's no Alfred. Cressida is kind of like there and then gives a smile that she's evil. I'm like, this is so soon and so fast. And we haven't really established any of these people enough to care about what's going to happen to them, really. So it was just kind of like a blah watch, not like a, I'm so angry I had to watch this, but like a, I don't really care what's going to happen to them in the future yet. Also the cinematography is atrocious. It's like the ugliest thing I've seen on the CW
That's true.
I don't know what they were going for, but it just turned out to be very, very, like, washed out and muted and ugh. So, yeah, not the Gotham that I want to see on screen. And it just made me miss Batwoman, like, the entire time. Do we have anybody who sent in feedback about the show?
I only see two for Flash. I didn't see any for...
Okay. I want to say this before you move on to the Flash, though. I also find it a little bit... I don't know, like, offensive or, like, I don't know. But the fact that Bruce Wayne, Batman, is, like, they're going after, like, teenagers. The concept that teenagers got together and outsmarted so Batman. Smart. Like, I feel like the Court of Owls, like, I would want to see the Court of Owls ask them, like, what was the, you know, thought process and why people believe it so hard that kids were able to kill Batman. Okay.
An excellent question.
Yes.
His Batman indeed. Clearly did not do very much.
He's just hanging out. All right. Moving on to the Flash. The good, the bad, and the lucky. As Barry and Iris prepare for their new life in two scenes. Luck changes for those in Central City because Becky Sharp is back from season 4. Crisis has miraculously brought her back to life. Cecile works on her case with Allegra, and they try to solve her, like, she's accused of murder, basically, and they try to figure out whether or not she did it. They know that she's innocent, and they have to try to find out who framed her and why. Meanwhile, over in Star Labs, Chester and Chilblain, the only member of the team left without them, work with Keown to figure out whether or not she has metahuman abilities, and it turns out she is neither 100% human nor 100% meta. So the question remains, who is she? Even though we've been asking ourselves this for like 5 episodes now. What sparked Joy?
Well, I guess I'll start. What sparked Joy? I love that Iris and Barry are, you know, getting to enjoy themselves, even if I don't get to witness them enjoying themselves. I loved Iris' hair when they came back. She was looking incredible. The whole surprise party aspect was very cute. I really like Becky Sharp as a character. I liked her the first time around. Fun to have her back now. And I thought that her little, like, story of, like, magically finding her Prince Charming while at the same time losing her good luck was very, like, early 2000s rom-com-esque in the best possible way. So I was really rooting for her. Glad her man did not die in the end. I was concerned he was dead, but he was just in a coma. And then he was, like, uncomad, and I guess they're going to get married and live happily ever after. Yay. Good for her. Glad she got her powers back in the end. Also very nice of Kramer to be like, I believe you, and I'm going to try to bring you the best defense. Unfortunately, the best defense is Cecile, so you're probably screwed. But she tried, and we respect that. And then finally, the sequence of Becky at Blackjack, having to do it for Tony or Toby or whatever that guy's name was. And then, you know, once she does get her powers back fighting the goons, all good. Yay! That is the end of my joys.
That was very short. But I mean, I feel like I understand. Like, my joys are pretty much the same. Like, I love Barry and Iris. I love Iris's hair, first of all. Shout out to the locks. That was a great choice. I liked that they were, I feel like they should have, like, at least called Joan to confirm the pregnancy, but whatever. I like that they are moving full force with the, you know, faith that she is pregnant. I like that they were going to Coast City specifically for an expansion party to celebrate CCC Media acquiring Coast City, whatever, Gazette, something, Coast City News. So that was great. And I like when they came back, their reaction to the baby shower specifically, like, I feel like the baby shower itself could have been incorporated differently or better, but I like that, you know, like, Iris, like, oh, Barry, you know, like, they were really, like, you know, cute about it, the belly rub and how excited they were for the baby, baby Nora to come. So that was great. I also like that Kramer was back in this episode, and that when she got the case, she got Becky's case, she was the first person to be like, this doesn't exactly make sense and connect her to Cecile to, you know, work together in that way. So there was a lot of different areas of the city. You've got the police department, you have the law side, kind of like working together. And then you have members of Team Flash that are doing this kind of investigation type episode. I also like the concept. I agree. I thought Becky in herself was like cute. And I think the concept of like her good luck turning into bad luck was really interesting. I think I felt more for her as a character than I did anybody else. I don't know if I should say this now or later, because I feel like as a one-shot or filler episode, this would have been fun or more fun in like season 4 or 5, like back when we still had joy for the series, or, you know, went back when it still felt lighter. So if I was to take it and transplant it back in time, I think it would be a pretty decent episode, the lead character notwithstanding there.
That was very kind of you. I also liked the reactions to the baby shower. I thought it was really cute, the fact that, like, there's no swooping while Iris is pregnant. And they're just going to, like, enjoy their time together by actually driving to places and just having couples massages. I like that the baby moon stuff is continuing, even if we do not get to see it anymore. I like the idea that Keone is not a meta or fully human either. Like, I feel like with so many, like, the show has been really into metas for since day one, really. So the fact that she's not one is fascinating in terms of, like, I guess by comparing her to other people. And Iris's hair is great. Her sound looks fabulous together. Becky Sharp, I do like her character, and I really felt for her. I felt really bad that this was happening to her in general, and like how desperate she seemed to want to, you know, help her fiance and make sure that she also gets off because she didn't do anything wrong. And just the general idea of like crisis bringing back these metahumans for a second round, even if they were killed off or sent to Iron Heights the first time around. I think that her character like just sparks a lot of joy because she is generally a joyful type of person. Although I remember having more fun with her character the first time around. yeah, I will leave it at that. What did not spark joy? Since I'm sure it was a much larger section. So let's get into it.
What did not spark joy? Okay. I mean, I mostly just have a lot of questions. Like, why is Allegra following Cecile around this, like, trying to defend this metahuman? As cool as she is, we all love Becky, but, like, Allegra, can you go do your job? Like, aren't you the acting editor-in-chief of Central City Media Pictures Citizen, whatever the fuck it's called? when Iris isn't around, it's not like they only have one article that goes up a day nowadays, right? There's a whole empire, a media empire that we're building, and you are the one in charge of it, so you cannot possibly be just chasing one story like you are a beat reporter from Iris in season one. So like, that was really weird and like just unnecessary. Also, Dani Nicolette, I'm so sorry, she's just not a very good actress, and the way that they write Cecile and the things they have her do suggests that they think she is a very good actress. And I just don't know what this disconnect is. I'm like, am I insane? Are they insane? What is happening? Why is she, like, going through an emotional crisis because she cannot go see her daughter on this weekend for, like, you know, 12 hours? And, you know, like, the fake, like, tears welling, or just, like, the, like, I'm getting hysterical now kind of things are never good for her. Also, why can't Joe just take the train back here if Cecile can't go down that weekend?
Like, true.
That could be very simple. I know it's because Jesse doesn't feel like being on the show, but you could just say that happened, and you just got an actress for Jenna, so you could show Jenna. Speaking of which, why would Iris and Barry not even be like, oh, hey, tell Jenna happy birthday or whatever the fuck when they leave? That is your sister. What is happening? Why does Iris not realize she has a sister? Anyway, so just nothing, like, once again, relationships outside of the ones that have been firmly established for many, many years, which is literally just Barry and Iris at this point, because Joey's gone, just don't feel real. Nothing feels real on the show anymore. Also, I thought it was so obvious that Tony was the villain. Like, as soon as he showed up, you're like, oh, well, he's the villain. So they didn't do very, like, particularly interesting twists with that. Like, you knew it wasn't me, Becky. And then there's only, like, one option for it. I guess you're like, oh, I guess the boyfriend got himself into some debt, the end. But yeah, whatever. It was obvious. And so that was, like, not a very exciting reveal. And then, of course, the whole, like, oh, Becky's bad luck. It's like, luck is so bad, it's affecting other people. But then it turned out that it was just Cecile not believing in herself because she's too upset about wasting Jenna's birthday or whatever. That was
so goofy.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, that was very after school special. Thank you. So that part was also dumb. What else? Oh, well, I mean, the entirety of the Keown plot, like, I just don't care. And I'd be fine with Keown. Like, if it was, like, Chester trying to figure out what's up with Keown, that's fine. But I just hate Mark so much. I wish that when Keown made it snow or the fuck, it would just, like, bury him. And he would just die. That would be so nice. I don't believe in, like, his feelings or whatever. Like, he, like, treats Keown badly because he, like, doesn't like that he, like, maybe has feelings for her. And therefore she must be more like Frost in order to him to accept the fact that he has feelings for her. It's just icky and gross and weird. And I don't want them to make it a ship. But they clearly are going to because they don't know what else to do with Caitlyn / Danielle Panabaker's characters ever. Other than put her in a random-ass ship with a random-ass character that has no personality, and just to take up 5 minutes of screen time every episode until that person leaves or gets killed off. So, I hate it, and I don't want it to be here. And then, why did we spend all episode trying to figure it out when, at the end, the answer was, it is both, and yet none. So, we'll pick this up again next week. Could have just waited until next week to do that, and given us some West Allen pool time, or whatever the hell they were doing. What else? Oh, yeah. Cecile asking Allegra to move in is, like, fine. It's a plot point. I don't have an issue with that. But the way that they have Cecile behave or the way that Cecile is played, like, whatever it is, where she's like, oh, my God, we're going to have, like, sleepovers. And we're just going to, like, chat and, like, girl chats, whatever. But you can't come over, Chester. Sorry. Like, it's like they're, like, besties. Like, Cecile really acts like she is going to be college roommates with Allegra. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, I am a married mother of two, or not even married, I'm so sorry. I'm a maybe soon to be married mother of two in her 40s who is offering you, a penniless 20 something year old wannabe journalist and ex-convict, a place to stay because my husband is currently away vibe. Like, that's a real vibe that you could see, but it does not exist here. It's just, oh my God, my best friend Allegra, move in with me. So I also hate that.
It's very off-screen Danny and Caleb.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't feel like, exactly, like, the characters and the relationships don't feel real anymore. It just feels like people are there and they're getting paid to show up and say these lines in whatever way suits them best. So yeah, I don't like that. I think that's pretty much like I know people were just like losing their minds over this episode and how bad it was. And I have to say, I think The Flash in general is so bad now that this barely like is barely worse than the worst. So I was just like, it's not good, but I'm not mad. I just think that you can't do better. So I understand.
I there's so many times, because at first I was like watching it and then I was like, okay, let me speed this up. So I went up to like 1.25. It was like, okay.
It's oh, 1.25.
No, like I was trying to like be in the moment, be in the watch. Like, I know you like default start at it too, but I was like, let me speed up a little bit. And then I was like, let me speed up a little bit again. Because it was just moving too slow, and the stuff that they were focusing on, like the heart to heart with Cecile and Allegra, and I was like, like you said, it doesn't really feel like a real relationship. And why is this woman getting a heart to heart and being cheered up by someone that's like 20 years younger than her, and she's supposed to be like, you know, the adult in this situation? It does feel very Danny and Kayla and not Cecile and Allegra. Like, and Cecile and Allegra don't even have a relationship, like a mother-daughter. I could understand if it was like a mother-daughter kind of thing that they had, but they don't have that because they're too busy trying to make Cecile also be 20 instead of like her age. And I just don't understand that choice. I feel like I was saying before, you know, like this as an episode, I still feel like having this episode with Cecile as a lead is a bit of a stretch to be good, but I do think it would have been decent with Barry back in it. And also if it was like season 4, season 5, it would have, I felt like it would have vibed better then. I feel like Becky as a plot and stuff like that, the funness of it, the fillerness of it would be okay. But now we're in the last season. It's featuring characters that are not well-liked while shipping off the main ship of the show after just announcing their like biggest milestone to date. And it just feels like, you know, a choice to be like, why would you say like West Island is having a baby? And then, like I said, don't go show them talking to Joan or like going on, you know, to a doctor, any other doctor to do a checkup to check on the health of the baby and how far along she is. They're just like shipping off to Coast City for like a party, which is great. But then we don't even get to see that. And that's like a huge, another huge milestone in Iris's like professional career, that there's an expansion going on. There could be something happening in Coast City that could connect to something else down the road. And they just don't do that. Instead, we have Cecile that is not like upset because she's not even sleeping in the house. She chose over Joe and Jenna, complaining that it's too empty. Like, this was a fixable situation. Like, you could have gone with Joe and been done with it. And I feel like even her staying to try and finish Becky's case before going over there, that's another choice. The choice that you made to not let Becky sit her ass in the holding cell for like a day so you can go and make your daughter breakfast. That was a problem that you made for yourself, to be honest. And it's not even the fact that they're like separated, because I feel like depending on like where you're from, like, you know, like I used to live in Japan, and that's like, it's part of business culture there. It's very normal for the one partner to, you know, leave and work alone in a city by themselves for like weeks or months while the rest of the family and the kids stay back in the hometown. But that, you know, they're going for like actual job and work reasons. And I still feel like we have not seen Cecile actually do her job in so long that the fact that as soon as Joe leaves, this is the busiest she's ever been. It's a little bit like unrealistic and hard to believe. I also feel like another thing that would have felt like this was a good episode back in the day is because they did have this kind of like strong woman hashtag. It was like hashtag feminism, the Redux, you know, because like that's like, the first time we did it was Iris's like bachelorette party, when that was supposed to be like a hashtag feminism kind of thing. And I feel like this one fails for the same reasons, and that it's very like hashtaggy and trying to make Superwoman happen. And the Superwoman being like lifting Cecile up on this platform that she is every woman. And it's part of that's annoying because they waited to ship Iris off screen to do this. And so it doesn't even feel, it's not even connected to the lead actress on the show. So that's a little bit weird. The whole Kyon training thing, like I was initially annoyed because it was like Mark and Chester wanted to test her for everything except the thing that she is obviously the most likely to have, which is like plant powers. That's all she talks about. And they mentioned every other superpower except that. So I was going to be like annoyed, because I feel like if you want to do like a training with her powers, then let's start from the fact that we think you have this plant power. Let's figure out how to get you to do it on purpose, whether it's like to weaponize it. And then she could be like, you know, that could be a storyline like, I don't want to use my power for bad. That would have been fine. That would have been a story. But then I found out that it wasn't about Kyon. Until I found out it wasn't about Kyon, it was actually about Mark. And the fact that he is feeling some kind of way because he's like feeling attracted to her, but she's not Frost. And so he has to make her have cold powers to validate feeling attracted to her in the first place. And now I'm annoyed for that reason. Because I just feel, yeah, I agree with you that he's just, he is whiny and he takes up so much space. I also thought it was really funny that Chester was like, let me call Carla Tannhauser. Like, when is the last time since Caitlin died? Like, there's like one mention of maybe we should talk to Carla. But it's really funny that you're calling Carla to help with Keone when we haven't even had like a discussion, a scene with Carla and this third daughter that she now has. No, like, understanding of how she felt about losing Caitlin. None of that. And then she's just, like, caring about Keon, like, off screen. That doesn't make sense either. So all of that is, like, really kind of, like, weird. There are other things I could probably say, but they're not in the top of my mind right now. But if they come back to me, then I will jump in. And another thing, blah, blah, blah. But Meg, you can go ahead.
Yes. I mean, all those things, really. It's just, it's annoying that this is also like the almost the midway point of the season and the leads are actually nowhere to be found. They disappear for an entire episode. And we don't get to see any of their scenes really, except when they come back. And I think that's most annoying to me because like when we do have Barry and Iris in the A plot, we also get the other characters. But when they get the A and B plots, we don't get them in this episode. And it's like offensive, honestly. And just like the episode itself was really slow. I was really bored a lot. I didn't even realize he mentioned Carla. Just like I did not hear that. I feel like I just tuned out at that point, maybe mentally. Because it was just the Cecile sob fest is I don't care. Like her crying about not being there for her daughter or missing the train. And it's like, first of all, you have those little gadgets that you can just poof and be in another location. Oh, why not just use that?
Oh, I'm so sad. There are multiple options. Joe could have taken the train.
So many options. So,
like,
and it's just like, it was so ridiculous because I'm like, if you miss them this much and you're sad that you can't be around your daughter, why not have moved there with them to begin with?
You know what else is stupid that I just thought of? Like when they first, like when the mob guys came to try and kidnap Becky and this time, like they were ready for him, like outside of like Cecile's office and he like flashbangs them. And so neither of them keeps their powers. And he just like drops it. Here, this is one time use only. So I will drop it so that you can take it and deconstruct it and figure out what it, like it just feels like really dumb. Like why would you do that? It's very like plot heavy in that here's this thing that will defeat you. Let me leave it here for you so you can figure out how to defeat me with it next time.
Yeah, it's laughable at this point. So yeah, I didn't care about Cecile. I don't care about her sad story because she had her options and she made her choice. And like you said, I mean, there's so many options for her to have seen her daughter. Like, and if she wants to be the superhero that she is aiming to be anyway, like she's going to have to realize she might miss out on those things and have to make it up to her later on or something like that. Like she just needs to get over it at this point. Allegra not being at CCC is like constantly annoying because we have like, they hired actors to be at that place and we don't ever get to see them. And if Allegra had like a relationship with them, like we saw a little bit last season, put her back in there, have them interact. Like that would be much more interesting than what we got in this episode. And also it's like Cecile working on the case and Allegra working on the case. It would have been so fantastic to have seen West Allen in that role, like Barry investigating as a CSI, Iris, you know, researching for her article or whatever. And that would have been 100 times better than what we got. So it just felt like a waste of time because we didn't get anything in terms of like the general plot of the season, which is another complaint because at what, 6-7 episodes already, there's no tension. There's no tension. There's no villain, coming in yet after the whole Red Death storyline was wrapped up super fast. We have nothing to really like, nothing promising coming up for what will happen to these characters and the stakes, because there are no stakes. And so it just feels like this episode was dropped in at the most inopportune time, and it has nothing to do with anything whatsoever. And no one wants to spend a whole episode wondering, like, why Mark suddenly has feelings for Kyon because she kissed him that one time and brought him back to life. Like, that's not a reason to like anybody. So it just feels like it's stalling a season that only has 13 episodes to begin with. And there's, like you said, Barry and Iris announced that they were going to have a baby, and there's no, like, checkup on the pregnancy. There's no, like, moments between them. Like, we got baby moon moments. Why not add a couple of scenes of them, like, you know, just taking in the joy of finally getting to meet Nora soon? Like, that would have been great. So it just feels like it was a really aimless episode that didn't really accomplish much and focus on all the characters nobody cares about whatsoever. It was just a really, really dull episode, and I'm sure that our feedbackers also thought similarly, perhaps.
But given that we only had two feedbackers, it's probably true that they, that in general, listeners felt it was not worth it. Nice
say.
So first we have Sonia, who says, after the Barry Iris pregnancy announcement last episode, I thought we'd get a lot more rest Ellen. So I was a bit disappointed this was such a filler episode, especially when the previous five have been so good. Interesting to see how Crisis brought Becky back to life and made her powers change. Becky needs a lawyer, so Cecile's going to miss her weekend with Joe and Jenna, obviously. Ugh. He did not like that either. Iris's hair looks amazing. Love seeing Candace have different hairstyles in the show. Wish they could let her have different hairstyles when Iris is in the episode for longer. That's so true. It's only when Iris is like, I'm leaving. Look at my hair. Yeah, exactly. Mark and Chester working to find out what meta abilities Kyon has. Allegra and her landlord. Becky Cecile, it's also boring. That's what happens when you send Iris and Ellen to Offscreenville. LOL indeed. Becky's bad luck rubbed off on Cecile, but not Allegra. So clearly, Cecile is not the most powerful meta, and she just sucks. Okay. You're like, it's one or the other. She's either the most powerful meta, or she just sucks. I don't care about the storyline of Kion's powers, but I loved Chester being all, say what? After Mark said Kyon kissed him. Kyon trying out different catchphrases reminds me of Tobey Maguire's first Spider-Man movie. That's cute. I guess that's one bonus for the episode. One plus point. Cecile's storyline is so boring. I don't care about her doubting herself. Interesting that the ring Becky has is changing her powers. She's clearly, this is her, like, live thoughts. She's live tweeting her thoughts to us. So that is when she learns that it was not the crisis. It was the ring. I like the we don't need saving, you do line. But it would have been more feminist if Allegra and Cecile weren't waiting for Chester to make a distraction for them. Cecile and Allegra are roommates. I don't care. I don't know what it is about Dani Nicolette, but her scenes with the younger cast feel so weird. I don't get parental energy. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like she's trying to be hip and young, and it's cringy to watch on screen.
Yes.
I mean, she does look very young. So, like, maybe that's why they go for that energy, but it's weird.
And, like, no, I feel like that's her. And they're like, write me like this.
Yeah.
But I agree. I can't believe I failed to mention that. Her acting is atrocious, and I can't take it anymore. It's very difficult.
Nia is in the next episode, and it seems like it's Iris-centric. I can't, and that she gets to keep his hair. Yay. I can't wait. Sad we have to wait 2 weeks. Oh my goodness. Well, I am also very excited. Speaking of Nia, I have been watching season 2 of Yellow Jackets, and Nicole is awesome in it. That's all.
Hey.
Okay.
I about like Kyon's like catchphrases thing. I mean, I get the energy that they're going for it, and I feel like if I was not disillusioned to Danielle Panabaker as a person or an actress, that I would find Kyon cute. Because I like get the vision, but you know, people are who they are, and I know what I know. For sure. And I feel how I feel, so.
Yeah. I agree with that. Like, Kyon is probably, like, you know, the best version of the Copa so far, but unfortunately, it is what it is. And she is who she is. All right, Sora. Hello, ladies. That was a terrible summary for a terrible episode. Best part was Iris debuting her locks briefly as we saw her at the beginning and the end. Please let her have them for more episodes. The announcement of Cecile and Joe's new arrangement was bad and cringy enough, but we did not need an entire episode from Cecile's POV to delve into it. It just wasn't good. I don't know what else to say that y'all have presumably said. Likewise, the kiss from Keone to Chilblain was bad enough, but we didn't need to dig deeper into it. It was so bad and cringe. This was the worst episode of the season so far. Please let it not sink any lower. Also, where the hell are Iris' other friends besides these bozos?
Right?
At the baby shower, to be fair.
Yeah, I feel like at the baby shower, there should have been more people.
And why did they wait for the baby?
And it's kind of funny because wasn't the baby shower supposed to be like, wouldn't it have been technically on a Saturday? Or was there like a time jump? Because I swear Cecile was about to go.
Yeah, and exactly. I'm like, why did you stay for the baby shower? Yeah, it was
very why did they wait till Joe was gone for them to have it? It's
yeah, so many things. Yeah. Why would they have it on Jenna's birthday? Like, I was like, there has to be a time jump. Why wouldn't Jenna come back for it? That's her niece. Like, or nephew, or whatever the fuck.
How did they get into the loft? Like, who
left? So, everything, the question.
Right.
Everywhere questions. So, anyway, and that's what you missed on the feedback for Glee.
Beautiful. Do we have any predictions?
It can only get better from
here.
Do
we care?
Okay, so next is, like, what do we think Nia is coming for? Like, what is her reason for asking for Iris' help? I don't think we even know. We can't know.
Because they're bunch buddies now.
The only thing that I can predict and hope is that the writers talked to Nicole about this episode and how to write for it, since she's written comics for Dreamer before. They consulted her a lot on Supergirl. I would hope that she was involved in the storyline. I feel like if she was involved in the storyline, maybe the writing will be better for the storyline.
Love it.
So that's my only hope. Oh, and someone did, like, people were reporting out that in one of the, because I think the summary is like different versions of their lives. And so one version that we see in the trailer is the police precinct. So Iris is like captain now, like Captain West Allen.
Oh, and that's were pointing out
like how that could have been like a nod to like Earth 2. Because that last time we saw them, like Iris was a detective in that Earth. So maybe this would be like a, with they're like following different Earth timelines, you'd see different irises. That would be kind of cool.
I think it would be interesting if we also saw one where she did actually like stay with Eddie just to have that draw.
I mean, sure.
Especially if he's going to come back at some point. I think that would be like some juicy tension. Not that I actually think that they're going to show it, but
no, but that would be interesting because we know that he is coming back and we know the story that he's coming back for. To like preview it in a quote unquote filler episode would be smart. Which
which is not
that
is smart.
Are they
yeah,
smart?
We're not going to do it.
That is the question. We'll find out.
All right. Do we have a lady with gumption of the week for either Gotham or The Flash?
I'm going to give it to Becky for The Flash.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, she had the gumption to live a charmed life with bad luck, and then also to get herself out of a murder charge, or attempted murder charge. And also to trust Cecile with her defense.
I think for Gotham, I'm going to go with Duella.
Oh, yeah.
I was gonna say either Carrie Kelly or Duella. Carrie Kelly in her two scenes, or Duella probably has the most like dynamic journey in that episode. You can tell who is what's her face's favorites, Natalie.
Oh,
you can
yeah,
tell
yeah.
who's her favorites and who's not so much, but
which
this is a very lukewarm nomination.
Yeah,
it is.
What can you do, though? All right.
Yeah.
So,
we have a winner?
yeah.
I guess Duella Dent. Let's go that way.
Yeah.
All right. Duella is our latest gumption of the week. We will be back in a couple weeks to go over the next Flash episode, which is the one with Nia coming back. Tune in then, and otherwise you can catch us over at Patreon, where we'll be talking about Cocaine Bear and probably You Part 2 at some point, Part 1 and 2. So tune in, send us your thoughts to ladieswgumption@gmail.com, ask to ladieswgumption@tumblr.com, and until next time, everybody, fare thee well.
Bye.
Bye.